Chapter 7, Step 1, Locating Prospects. Every business must locate people to buy its products and services, or it's soon to be out of business. In our case, we must locate people who have houses for sale so we can buy their product, a house. That's not a hard process, but it's deadly if it doesn't get done. In fact, when I converse with students who aren't doing well, it usually comes down to one or more reasons. Either they haven't done much to find deals, or they're finding them and letting them go by because they don't negotiate or recognize a good deal and what it looks like, or don't know what to do next. I'll fix that in the next chapter. Before I go any further, we should discuss the use of realtors. It's easy to pin all your hopes on them and assume they'll do most of the work for you. Sorry, bad news. The only time you'll use realtors is to make offers on listed junkers. Realtors won't be used in the pretty house business for any reason, for two valid reasons. First, they want to get paid, and most pretty house deals are take over debt or buy with owner financing or options. There's no money to pay realtors. The seller gets little or nothing, so the deals are cashless. The second reason realtors won't be used is that pretty house business is the biggest roadblock. Realtors won't advise their clients to sell the way you want to buy. They'll get in the way. They'll create problems for you. They'll block the sale and destroy the deal if it involves taking over debt without liability or involves options, usually lease options, all buying techniques in the pretty house business that realtors are not accustomed to using. Their business is built around finding a qualified buyer, taking them to bank, and getting them a loan. Your only market, therefore, for pretty houses is buy through FSBOs. That's for sale by owners. Here you must deal with the seller directly, and all listed properties are off limits unless the seller can convince the realtor to drop the listing. Note that I said the seller, not you, must contact the realtor. If you do, the realtors will not drop the listing because they know that the seller is trying to sell the house behind their back and they actually want to get paid. Imagine that. And you can't interfere with that process. So if you wish to have the seller contact the realtor, you may, but do not contact them directly. Ugly houses offers are usually all cash, so it's easy to see how in this case of an ugly house, the realtor gets paid from the seller's proceeds if it's a listed property. And the seller's responsible for making that payment to the realtor, not you, the buyer. However, if your entire ugly house business revolves around buying listed houses, you're going to have a tough road ahead. So here's a strong word of advice. Your business must not depend on realtors to do anything. Are realtors useful? Yes, in some cases, such as for buying listed junkers. But don't forget, they control the deal and you're not their only customer. This buffer, the realtor, between you and the seller will drive up the price and make listed houses tougher to buy. Your best market will always be unlisted houses. The best of the best are houses the rest of the world doesn't even know are for sale because they're not on the market until you plant the bug in the seller's ear you're a buyer. Here's a simple rule that separates the real players from beginners. The easier a deal is to find, the more it costs. Listed houses and FHA and VA repos are easy to find. Therefore, they cost more and less profit is made. It's always better to have sellers calling you, but here we'll discuss ways to find deals where you make the first contact. Stick to the FSBOs, and I promise it'll be easier to make a lot more money when you discover who wants to deal with you, which is discussed in the next chapter on pre-screening. The three best ways I know to find ugly houses. The first step is to a successful business, any business, is to locate prospects who are predisposed to do business with you. The good thing about finding ugly houses is they're easy to spot. They're ugly. They just sit there and glare at you. Anyone can see they need repairs, and we assume if they're ugly, there's a reason to contact the owner to see if we can buy it at a wholesale price. Obviously, it's a numbers game. You'll buy some and some you won't. In fact, you won't get most of them, especially the ones you think ought to be the easiest to buy because they're the ugliest. As I write this, I've just seen my Roth IRA grow $80,000 from two checks on two ugly houses I bought, rehabbed and resold. I made $43,230 on one and $37,233 on the other, tax-free for life. And that was just half because I had a partner. But note, I didn't make the money. My IRA made the money. therefore tax-free forever. Both were partner deals with people I know, so I only got half the profits. Of course, I didn't touch the houses. In fact, I've never seen a picture of one of them. Perhaps I should go take a look. Well, maybe not. The check seemed to clear okay. Ugly houses are very profitable, too profitable for you to ignore. Nonetheless, I'm hearing too many students say they'd rather do pretty houses and not mess with the uglies, but that would be a mistake, a big mistake. Some pretty houses are easy in, easy out, no contractors, little or no costly entanglements. So what? Does that excuse you from harvesting the gold on the uglies? I think not. The two examples I just told you about should make my case. And they were on low-end houses. You can't find pretty houses without finding ugly ones. Turn your back if you will, but it'd be a shame to trash a couple hundred grand a year because you have blinders on. Not only that, but ugly houses are easier to find than pretty simply because they're ugly. Usually you find the house first and then you see if the seller needs and the existing financing makes sense for you to buy. Besides, buying ugly houses requires very little communication and people skills. You don't have to meet anyone because most of the uglies are vacant, so buying is an easy process. If rehabbing turns you off, you have several choices. You can get someone else to handle it, as I do, or you can wholesale your uglies. Here are my best three methods of finding junkers. They are the Ant Farm, Realtors, and Direct Mail. If you implement one correctly, you should easily do a couple of deals a month. Do them all, and who knows? The key word is correctly. Not a slapshot attempt so you can make excuses for your failure. Serious people do what it takes. All right, let's talk about method one, the Ant Farm. This is by far the most productive way to find junkers. I call it the Ant Farm because it involves a couple of people, well, ants, running around looking for ugly houses and bringing them to me. I pay $10 per lead if the lead meets my criteria of being ugly and in neighborhoods I assign. You should be your own ant for some time. Simply drive around through the low-priced neighborhoods and write down all the addresses of ugly vacant houses. Then come home and track down the owners and call them to see if you can strike a deal. There are complete details about my ant farm in several courses, my ugly house cash flow system, and of course I discuss it in my live 4-day quick start event that I still teach. Here are five key points that explain where most people fall at the ant farm, or fail at the ant farm. Like anything else, do it right and don't whine when it doesn't work. Ugly houses are in low-priced areas. You won't find them in gated communities. If you're having trouble locating them, you're probably in the wrong neighborhood. Number two, you must look up all the addresses on the tax rolls and determine if the mailing address is different from the address on the vacant home. If so, get the phone number from the information at 411 or 411.com or any number of other sites and call a seller. Don't send a letter yet. Get to the phone and talk to the seller if you can. You can usually get to your local tax rolls online by going to yourcounty.org. Number three, if you don't make contact with the seller, the rest is a waste of time. Do what you have to do to make it happen. There's no way you can buy a house that is not listed unless you talk to the owner. Number four, you can always hire a skip tracer to find the ones you can't find. This is where most people quit, yet it's where the real money is to be made. If you take the trouble to find the houses that nobody else will find, you'll get deals that nobody else will get. The harder they are to find, the bigger the profit. I'm sick of telling people this and watching them go cheap here. If you're not going to do this, the ant farm is not for you. Number five, you must understand it's a numbers game. You can't get upset after the first 20 houses don't produce a deal. It's all math. All businesses are math. Now let's assume you send a batch of 20 houses to the skip tracer. He'll find about 70% of them are 14, which means you'll pay about $200 or so. Suppose you get one deal out of that 14. That wholesales for a $10,000 profit. Do we need to run a spreadsheet on this? It's a no-brainer. If you don't get a deal from the first 20 leads, go find 20 more. If they don't produce, get another 20 more. Could you spend $400 to make $10,000? Why is it so difficult for sensible people to understand the simple math? If you do what I just said, you can't fail with the ant farm unless you just totally screw up the offers. It won't fail you, only you can fail it. Doesn't stand to reason that some of the owners of the ugly houses would love to sell them to you for cash. Go find them and let them tell you what they want. Method number two is realtors. Realtors have always been a good source of ugly houses, even though it's been a little tougher in the last few years to get the deals. The real estate market has been good, which produces easier sales for the banks and brings the wannabe investors out of the woodwork, not to mention the television shows. However, I've been getting listed deals all along, as have many of my students. In fact, the one I mentioned earlier that made me $43,000 for my half was a real estate-owned, bank-owned property listed with a realtor. Issues to consider on listed houses. One, you'll probably need some proof of funds to submit an offer if you're dealing with a realtor. This can be a bank statement of anyone you know, a letter from a mortgage broker, a letter from anyone who says he or she will fund the deal, someone's mutual fund or IRA statement, or even your own credit card statement showing cash available to cover the purchase. Proof of funds doesn't mean the funds must come from the source of proof you provide. Just because you show a realtor your mother's IRA statement doesn't mean mom is obligated to put up the money. Also, remember that the only time you will ever need proof of funds is when you use realtors, not when you're dealing with FSBOs. Number two, expect to put up about a $1,000 deposit or more when buying listed houses. Number three, keep your offers clean with no contingencies, no subject to anythings, because if you put any contingencies in the contract, they won't even get presented. They won't even have a chance to be turned down. The realtors won't even present them. The contingency that's already built in is you'll get clear title. You do not have to worry about adding it. You'll use the realtor's contract, so don't be trying to pull out yours because they will not accept yours. They'll use their contract, which quite often is the contract of the lender that owns the property. Next, the first time a realtor believes you can't close, game's over. The last thing you tell a realtor is that you want to wholesale the house. Keep your mouth shut, because if they don't believe you can fund it, you can understand why they don't want to do business with you. Next, find the ugly houses that are listed first, then call the listing agent to make an offer. Don't try to get the realtors who deal in pretty houses to help you buy ugly houses. That's like trying to get me into a size 28 pants. It would involve some excruciating pain and a lot of work and would likely never happen. In fact, trust me, it would never happen. All right, method number three is direct mail. Direct mail will produce results if you do it correctly and stick to it. There are numerous targets to mail to, so your best bet is to pick two or three and focus on them. I suggest mailings to out-of-town owners of vacant ugly houses in your own city. They're good and prove-it targets that yield results. We have a person that we work with that'll do all of the work for you to send the letters, help you get the list. It's totally turnkey. You can contact our office to find out who. Another target is the list of condemned houses you can get from your code compliance officer. Of course, they are pre-foreclosures and probably the highest paying segment of the business. These are easy to find because in these cases, the lawsuit has been filed and on the public record, but it's difficult to get a response from these owners. So if you're going to work pre-foreclosures, you'd better get some training. We have a complete system to do that, but it's totally different than approaching beautiful homes in beautiful neighborhoods where the payments are current and the seller has no apparent issues. Frankly, it takes two or three things properly implemented to get several houses a month. Don't get carried away trying to do too much. Choose your weapons and put them to work. In fact, the ant farm will be instrumental in everything I mentioned here. It will locate the house you will buy and from realtors and produce a list of out-of-town owners to mail to if you can't get a phone number. It's cheap, it's effective, and you can crank it up and down at your own pace as you see fit. I'd make an ant farm a part of your buying machine, as long as somebody's willing to follow up and track down the owners, which is easy to do online. There's so many sites today. All right, three good ways to find pretty houses. I discussed three ways to find ugly houses, so it's only fitting I now cover the other side of the business. We should start with defining what a pretty house really is. It's not the price that produces the definition. The house could be high priced, but most people in the pretty house business work in the range of about $150 to $200 on up to about $1.5 million. If you're in a high-priced market such as San Francisco, where a $250,000 house is rare, your range will be higher. Your market will determine your range. Point is that the pretty houses start at the bottom and go up. They're not just expensive houses, as I've noted. My definition of a pretty house is any house requiring less than $5,000 in work to get it in good sellable condition and can be bought without paying all cash. An ugly house is one that needs rehab or a lot of repairs or even very little, but it's usually an all cash deal. A good way to remember pretty house deals, if they come with terms, they're a pretty house deal, most likely. Yes, we can buy ugly houses on terms as well, and sometimes do. But in my language, I use ugly houses as a synonym for all cash and pretty houses as a synonym for terms. I'd want you to work both sides of that business and become a transaction engineer who can recognize a deal when you see it, whether it's pretty or ugly. Don't fall into the trap of trying to get so specialized that you turn your back on lots of other profits. There's gold in both ugly and pretty houses. Most people start with the ugly houses because they're easy to find and easy to understand, and they're either a wholesale or a rehab, and that's okay, but it's only a start. Pretty houses are easy in and easy out. Usually it's a get the deed and or lease option or buy it with owner financing, and you're in and you're out within a few days, usually within 30 days, eliminating contractors and reduces holding costs. Plus, it produces a few thousand dollars in front-end profit. And I mean, in today's market, that starts at about 20 and goes up. A person could get used to this part of the business and easily make the decision to ignore the uglies. So how do you find the pretties? Well, there are a number of ways, but we'll focus on the good ones here. Method number one is signs. Signs never fail to get calls, usually before you get home. I'm referring to the stick signs you place on the side of the road. They can be put up with a stick, or they can be put up on the wire racks that they come with. The good news is you'll get calls. The bad news is some calls might be from the city asking you to remove one or two because someone has complained about them. If a call from the city would give you a heart attack, use other methods. Most cities have ordinances against these signs, but some don't. You'll have to check that out, but the bottom line is that all cities have signs, and a lot of students elect to take their chances. That is your choice. You do not have to put these signs up. We call them bandit signs, in order to buy houses. I'm getting to plenty of ways you can do that without doing so. I've heard of some investors who were subjected to a fine as repeat offenders, and every once in a while I hear of a city that gets nasty. I once received a letter from a city office in Oregon, asked me to advise my students that it has ordinance against these signs. I don't know how they got a hold of me, but I got the letter. Okay, you've been advised. Many students put up signs on Friday afternoon and pick them up on Sunday night to avoid aggregation from the city, which may sound foolish until you look at the numbers. The signs cost about $2 each, so if you put out 50, you got about $100 invested. Pick up the remaining 40 or so on Sunday night, and the cost is whatever, $60 times $2 that you will lose. I mean, 10 or 15, 20 signs that you lose at $2 a piece. And I promise you, they will come up missing. Because if the city doesn't remove them, the neighborhood sign police will. But it's a very small investment, because when we put up signs, we usually get quite a few calls. If you get 10 to 15 calls over the weekend and you buy one house with a $20,000 profit, it's kind of a no-brainer, isn't it? All of a sudden, it's worth the risk of the heat from the city. In some areas, the city could care less, and your signs have a long life. But don't be scared off by a warning here. Do your own due diligence and make the best decision you can that matches your own personality. Most signs are on fiberboard, around 18 to 24 inches. I like black letters on yellow, but have used other colors successfully. Be careful when you make up the sign. You don't want to put too much detail on it. Remember, people are moving when they see it. So make the phone number large, and don't forget to make it easy to read. Just so you'll know, I do not even put my website on my signs. I want them to call a phone number, which goes to Pat Live, a 24-hour answering service we set up that collects a little bit of information and then sends that information to me to forward to my virtual assistants to call and fill out a property information sheet. All I have on my signs are, I buy houses, K cash, and a phone number. That's all I put on them. I don't put a website on them because I don't want them going to the site and getting all confused and delaying their action. Don't complicate the signs and make them hard to read. You can also have your car or truck lettered with vinyl letters, especially in the back window. Today, we are using see-through letters in the back window, and it cost about $70 to have them installed by a sign shop, and they work like a charm. Method 2, direct mail campaigns. This can be a full marketing machine all in one if you do nothing else. Not only does it work well for many people, but the list of targets is so big that you can target your chosen prospects and never run out of prospects. Even though signs work, the best target you can hope for is an area you like. With direct mail, you use a rifle approach. With many of the other advertising methods, you use a shotgun approach. We have a young lady who handles all the mail campaigns for us. She will work with you one-on-one and literally not only create your campaigns, but also do the mailing, work with your list companies, and make your life easy, because all you have to do is tell her who you want to mail to, how many per week, and pay her, and it's done at a very reasonable cost as well. Here's a list of some possible targets for direct mail, and we have more. We have a complete system on this. In fact, today we use what we call yellow letters, which have been working now for over 16 years, but the biggest key ingredient to these campaigns are the list you choose to mail to. Pre-foreclosures are a gold mine if they're worked correctly. Their entire business within the business. That's people that have not been filed on yet, but you have reason to believe that they're in trouble, but they own a house. Out-of-town owners are always a good list, especially with out-of-town owners that have a vacant house where you live. You can get this list now and target it, and I'm hearing good things from people all over the country about this particular type of list. New homeowners who have been in their house less than 2 years. Now, you might wonder why we'd want to mail to them, but actually the reason is because after about 2 years, people buying a house, a lot of them are ready to sell the house, believe it or not. They bought off more than they can chew or for whatever reason. So I like mailing to people that have been in their house from 2 to 4 years. And I just send them the handwritten or supposedly it looks like a handwritten yellow letter. And I've gotten some pretty good deals by doing that. The good thing is they'd have very little equity. They have a low interest rate loan, and they're glad to walk away from the house and give it to you if you just take over their debt. That's why they're one of my favorite targets. People have been in the house for not very long, and I know their loan is high, and I know they have some equity, and of course that means their payment is low. So good targets. All right, zip codes where you want to buy. It's another list. I've had mailed many letters to just areas where I want to buy in. I just decide the zip code and drop the yellow letter to them. And of course, we can mail to divorces and estate sales and military targets, people in bankruptcy, and numerous other targets that we can mail to. If you're interested in doing a direct mail campaign, I suggest you at least go on our Gold Club site. That's ronsgoldclub.com and learn all you can about our yellow letters. There's lessons on there about it. And get some education before you go wasting money on direct mail. You'll also find the yellowletterlady.com on there as well. And she can help you design your own campaign. And like I said, literally do it for you if you wish to let her. All right, method number 3 is calling ads. Now, the good news is we have a whole floor of virtual assistants who will do this for you. They will call your ads. And if you subscribe to the Gold Club, literally every day you will get for sale by owners in your inbox for a measly $59 a month. We supply you the leads. These are people who advertise online. They have a house for sale. So you simply sign up for the Gold Club. And when you get these leads, you forward them to our virtual assistant and let our virtual assistant make the call and fill out the property information for you. This has never been easier than it is today. You can get the property information sheet from page 190. Well, you can, in a regular book, you can get it, but you can actually go on my website and get it, ronlegrand.com. You'll find it there, and you'll find it all over the Gold Club site as well. It's a very specially designed property information sheet that collects all the facts that you need to determine whether you want to call the seller or not. And today, our virtual assistants literally asked the sellers if they would consider taking a monthly payment until we pay them off in full. In other words, our VAs will pre-screen the sellers for you and get a yes or a no answer to that question, making it very easy for you to decide who you want to call. That's obviously the ones that answer yes. So your job is to generate these leads. Their job is to call them. Then your job is to make the outbound call behind that. Read my simple scripts that you'll also find on the Gold Club site and get the seller to the conclusion as to whether they're worthy of you going out to see the house or not. 22 more ways to find deals. When I started, I knew that as sure as pushing the gas pedal makes a car go faster, investing more in my buying machine would increase my income. The first several months were the toughest because I needed every dime just to keep the lights on and the roof over my head. If money is tight for you, hang in there. It will pay off. Think of your business as an airplane. For a plane to take off, the pilot must give it more power. The plane goes faster and faster until it finally becomes airborne. At that point, does the pilot decrease the power? No. He continues to give it full throttle as the plane climbs rapidly up to a cruising altitude. Then it's full speed ahead. Likewise, you should keep feeding fuel to your buying machine, even if you're flying high, and you'll keep speeding toward your financial goals. Don't do what the so-called competition does and start cruising before you even in the sky. Keep the buying machine cranked to full throttle. But you will spend a lot less effort and a lot less money once you get the machine started and have it working smoothly. Now let's look at 22 more ways to find motivated sellers, even though you will never use all 22 of them. Number one is a credibility kit. This item is useful to some. It is just a kit that is designed for you to hand to the seller, which makes you look more credible than you may think you are. There are several pieces to it, including a presentation folder and a cover letter describing why they should trust you, and maybe some photographs of houses that you have done. But honestly, between you and me, if you need a credibility kit, you probably need more work on your script reading and what comes out of your mouth than you do a credibility kit. In my opinion, if you need a credibility kit, the problem is what's coming out of your mouth, not because people don't trust you for any other reason. There's a lot of things you could put in this kit, but honestly, if you need them, you got bigger issues we need to work on first. Number two, run your own ads. All investors run ads, mostly online today, and many of them are the same. Your challenge is to be different without losing the simplicity and effectiveness that you want. Don't be afraid to test new ideas constantly and track your results. When you get a call or an email, whether from a classified ad or other ideas I'm sharing with you, ask where the seller saw your ad. Here are a couple of ads that work for me. I buy houses, any condition, cash, walk away today, and a phone number. And that's it. That's it. Or I buy houses when others say no, and a phone number. That's it. Be innovative and try your own ideas. Run your ads in the, you can run them in the major daily paper. I still see ads in the newspaper. Believe it or not, people are actually still reading the newspaper. But of course, you're going to run them online. But if you're going to run them online, our virtual assistants will do it for you if you simply tell them you want them to do it. There are other things you can do, like radio spots, or you can attend home shows, magnetic signs on your vehicle, perhaps, or you can get your vehicle wrapped. There's door hangers, and there's shirts, and you could sponsor little league teams or bowling leagues. You can put billboards out, and bus benches, and all these kinds of things, business cards, and on and on and on and on and on. There's a whole list of items you can do. And in fact, I've listed them in my book if you want to order it from Amazon or from us. But the truth is, I don't think you need any of them. There's just three or four things that you should do if you want to buy and sell houses. And honestly, we've accomplished one of them by just delivering leads through our Gold Club service. I'm telling you, my friend, you probably will not be able to handle the leads that are in our Gold Club service alone. Most of our students are finding they are keeping them plenty busy. And just think, that's for $59 per month. RonsGoldClub.com. More on real estate agents. The following is what I want agents to do for me and what I will do for them. Remember, this applies when we're buying ugly houses, not pretty ones. Find properties that can't get listed. The listing agent gets a commission even if another agent or agency sells the house. For that reason, real estate agents are always looking for properties to list. In their search, they may run across sellers who can't list because they have no equity or can't afford to pay commission. I ask them to simply refer these sellers to me. I'm able to put together a deal. I'll pay them $500 as a referral fee. I'm glad to pay a $500 referral fee on any house they buy, regardless of who gets it. The agents can find the sellers that are in pre-foreclosure. Most real estate agents aren't interested in a property in pre-foreclosure because of the time pressure, but I am. Doesn't hurt to let them know that you buy them and ask them to refer to you. Again, a finder's fee. Find vacant properties in nice neighborhoods. Vacant unlisted properties usually represent a problem you can solve at a profit. Property must be vacant for any reason, any number of reasons, including pre-foreclosure, a divorce, a transfer, and so on. And there's no way for agents to make money on a vacant house unless they can find the seller and get the listing. The effort is usually not worth the agent's time, so I ask them to give me the address and I'll take a look and I'll hunt them down. And if I wind up buying it, I'll give them a $500 finder's fee. They can bring in any deals that aren't profitable, anything that doesn't meet their needs. Perhaps they got a seller that has repair issues and the house can't sell because it needs so much work. Or they got a seller who needs to cash out quickly and the agent knows that they cannot get it done that fast. The list of things that can go wrong and stimulate an agent to send you the deal rather than just saying no are endless. So it would not hurt for you to get a relationship with several agents and let them know what you do for a living. No man ever achieved worthwhile success who did not, at one time or another, find himself with at least one foot hanging well over the brink of failure. Napoleon Hill.